This is another iRaw podcast.
My name is Katya, and this is The Animal That Changed You. I believe loving an animal is one of the most accessible, most available portals for self-healing in the whole world. It's my privilege to encourage you to open your heart to animals and challenge you to deepen your compassion just a little bit more. Welcome to The Animal That Changed You.
Hi, everyone. It's been a minute since I come to you alone, just me, an animal lover, a dog nut, asking you to love her. Just kidding. I'm asking you to love animals. I know you already do, and I'm so grateful that we're connected in that space. Wherever that may be, and however large or small the concentric circle of overlap between us is. Today, I want to talk to you about fostering shelter pets, how to bring one home, and why I think it's magical. Okay, I'm just going to dive in, okay, into the deep, like I like to do. My husband, I was once out of town, and when he picked me up at the airport, I started talking to him about capital punishment, literally upon arrival. And he was like, really would like to just like hear how your flight was and if you had peanuts. Like, can we just wait in the shallow for a bit? Okay. He puts up with me and I love him for it. So you know what else? He says yes to a lot of fosters, and I want to give you some updates on my own life as it relates to fostering. Our most recent foster, formerly known as Shaggy, a 9-year-old, probably 75, 80-pound, beautiful gray baby boy who was found as a stray hanging out in a basketball court with a bunch of kids. We brought him in as a foster, and we have decided to keep him and make him our forever. And I'm so happy about it. I'm just so happy he came into our lives. He's shown me new levels of the things I need to learn about the assumptions I make, the fears I still have, the ways I control, and what a benefit it is to let go. And he's regal, and nothing really ruffles him, and he farts when he walks, which is adorable. My husband and him have a, like, total bromance, and his new name is Wally, the walrus, and we love him. My beagle girl, my senior Sassy, who's sort of taken up the mantle as the ambassador to fosters since Ophelia's passing. I feel like Ophelia really downloaded all the info to her. And that might sound woo-woo, but I stand by that. Sassy, literally in the difference between one day to the next, hurt her disc somewhere in her back or neck. My poor baby girl is shaking, legs shaking, very arched back. Her tail is like a corkscrew. I've never had a dog's tail communicate so clearly to me that she's in pain. So she is on strict crate rest and meds for the next 2 weeks. That's what's going on here. I look forward to taking in another foster when she's okay and well, and when it's the right senior, the right time. And I want to tell you that taking in a shelter pet is really good for that shelter animal. Yes, we know that, right? Like, we make more room. It saves that life, but it also saves so many lives because shelters are simply at capacity and don't have kennel space for dogs, cats, bunnies, gerbils, whatever kind of animal comes in, unless more people open their heart and home and understand that homeless pets is a communal problem. It's a community problem. And we know it's good for animals. But, dog butt, guys, it's good for you. It's good for you. And there's healing. And there's insight, and there's hope, and there's connection, and there's new lessons, and there's joy, and it's fun. And it means so much to see what you're capable of. Do I cry every time a foster leaves? Yeah, pretty much. Has it taught me to be able to bear my discomfort? Has it taught me more about letting go? Has it taught me how to bear another being's discomfort? Yeah. My point is, even the hardest parts about it are gifts. With that all out of the way, let's get into the nitty-gritty on how to bring in a shelter dog. And I'm going to focus on shelter dogs specifically because that's what I do most of, not because I don't love the other animals. I do. I'm going to start by telling you that breed and age and fur and color and all that stuff, that's nice. Have your preferences and your the characteristics you enjoy. But the most important thing when bringing any animal home, in my opinion, is personality. They're all unique individuals. So does that dog's vibe and character fit with your lifestyle? I love seniors because that's the energy I need more of. Just like moving pillow vibe, you know, just like chill. I need to learn from that. So let's say you pick your senior or you pick any aged animal, but how do you do that? Well, you go to the shelter and lucky for you, the most marvelous people work at and volunteer at a shelter. So you ask questions. Maybe you like to run. You can say, I want a dog that runs with me. Maybe you don't like to run. You say, I want a dog that's super relaxed. I want a dog that's good with people coming and going, good with kids, good with cats, good with other dogs. You ask questions and you make a decision based on your gut and the information and connection you make with another human being who spends time at the animal shelter and the connection you make and pick up on spending time with this dog to take that animal home. Now, before doing that, I want to make tiny step zero. Let's say step one is finding your match. Step zero would be have the supplies and systems in place in your house. I should have said that first. What do I mean by that? One, have a crate or a penned area with a dog gate, baby gate. Have dog food, have bowls, have enrichment toys like food puzzles or lick mats or Kongs. Have a few toys or balls they might like. Have a leash, collar, and a tag that says foster with your name, with your number, so that, you know, if anything should happen, the dog can be identified. Just have supplies and have systems in place in the home, meaning know where the dog's going to spend time and where you can section the dog off when you're, you know, not home. All right, so that's step zero. Step one, you find your match. You bring the dog home. You bring this lucky, lucky love bug home. Well, I want to tell you something. When a dog comes into a new pack, it's a very exciting time and it can be a very scary time because dogs are immensely social creatures. And when they meet a new group, a new pack, they're not only trying to figure out who those new beings are, they're also trying to figure out who they are. What is their identity? Where do they rest and lie and fit in relation to this pack? It doesn't happen right away. It can be more or less frightening based on the dog, the dog's experiences and associations and their threshold, which is a natural genetic component that you can't control. My point is go slow. Go slow and gradual. And it's a wonderful reminder for us to slow down and let things be gradual and not expect immediate gratification or the manifestation of our expectations simply because we want them. I like to tell people, give the dog at least a week, up to three, to just decompress. Shelter dogs, depending on how long they've been there and what they've been through before. And by the way, this goes for any animal. This goes for dogs you buy from breeders where you think maybe you're going to bypass what I'm about to say, but not necessarily. Dogs can experience tremendous levels of stress and cortisol just running through their veins, running through their body, whether that's a quote-unquote purebred that you purchase. No judgment, just making an observation that it doesn't guarantee you a dog without that experience. Or a shelter dog, you need to give some time for them to allow that cortisol physiologically to exit the body, for them to understand that they're safe. And you won't see their true blooming or all the beautiful personality traits they have to show you, as well as their limitations and preferences and needs. You won't really see those things until you've given them some decompression time. It's important to have a routine. Write it down. DM me and I'll write it down with you. Try taking the dog out at the same times every day. Breakfast and dinner around the same times every day. Walks, at least one, hopefully if the dog is healthy enough to experience and expose them to the world. And that doesn't have to be the only quote-unquote socialization you do. Maybe you drive to Starbucks with your new foster pup and you get yourself a coffee and them a puppuccino and you let them experience that socialization, or you go to a trail or a park in your area and let them sniff without you having an agenda of how long the walk should be or healing. Whatever you can do to give them an experience in the world, build it in as part of the routine. And, you know, guys, you do not need to be perfect. One of my favorite things about dogs is that you're allowed to make mistakes. It's okay. There's no pressure. They are the most forgiving beings. But try to stick to the routine. Try to have some consistency so that they know what to expect, so that they're decompressing, that cortisol's leaving, and they feel safe. You can tell them, I'm here for you. You're safe. Great. When you say those words, they may not know the words, but they understand the energy. And that's what dogs are. They are just balls of energy. That's what animals are, all animals. They don't have the mess of intellect that interferes with their energy. It's sometimes so much easier for them to align, and it's beautiful. And watching it is an incredible blessing. Moving on to the next phase. You've given them some time to decompress. Your supplies and systems were in place. You have a routine. You're going slow and gradually. You're forgiving yourself when you make mistakes so you can keep going. This foster dog is having a nice time at your house. Make sure that every day there is time away from you, not just during the decompression phase that I believe lasts 1 to 3 weeks. Dogs need that alone time to not have to manage the whole house, not have to manage all the people or other animals there, just be den animals like they are. Spend time in their crate or penned area alone. This way we don't create a codependent situation. And I really mean that word, where your dog has uncomfortable feelings coming right out of the shelter and then learns to rely on you for the relief. We don't want that. We don't want a dog who doesn't learn how to self-soothe. We don't want a dog who ignores their ability to feel their emotions and let them pass because you're there to distract or even reinforce unintentionally that state of mind. And then as we move out of the decompression phase, as I like to call it, you still want to make sure that your foster dog has these times alone built into the day. Time to just rest. I want to tell you something really important that's overall going to hopefully stick with you, no matter what part of the phase you're in. It's really important to reinforce dog behavior and dog state of mind, emotionality, mindfully. And what do I mean by that? Anytime you touch a dog, look at a dog, play with, of course, feed. Anytime you are close to them proximity-wise, using your, you know, verbal cues, interacting. Anytime you interact, you are reinforcing. Those are reinforcers. It doesn't have to be full-on praise or treats for them to be getting a hit of reinforcement, whether you mean to or not. Your eye contact, your touch, your words, all of it is reinforcement. And it's pretty powerful to remove reinforcement by simply turning away or ignoring a behavior you don't like. What's important to understand, what's really significant, is the follow-up piece. When the dog stops doing the undesired behavior and gives you what you do like, that's the moment to calmly, neutrally, but positively turn around and give them your eyes, give them your touch, give them your praise. Good boy, good girl. Let them know more of that, more of that. This is what I want. Are you going to walk through your moments with your foster dog reinforcing everything perfectly? No, it's a lifelong journey, just like with your partner or your kids or your parents, just like with your passion or your purpose or your diet, your exercise routine, or your meditation practice or your yoga practice. It's a lifelong journey. You never get to the end. You never get a finished check mark, dog's perfect. It's not going to happen. You're not going to be perfect. That's not going to happen. It's supposed to keep going. It's about the keeping going. That is the beautiful part. As best you can, you know, we give our dogs a lot of attention when they're doing things we don't like. By the way, we do this with people too. Dogs jumping up on you when you walk in the door. Hey, stop it, knock it off. Well, they think it's a blast. They've got you. You're looking at them, touching them, talking to them. I mean, why would they stop? If you walked in the door and your dog was jumping up on you and you simply turned around and ignored that, like they weren't there, like full on talk to the hand energy, your dog would offer a different behavior because behavior is variable. And the minute that your dog, that foster dog, backs off or sits or is quiet, boom, you turn around. Hey, buddy, how are you doing? Nice to see you. Over time and consistency, that dog is not going to go crazy when you walk in the door. Your dog is going to learn to be calm, to sit, to do the things that feel like the kind of lifestyle and kind of environment and culture you want in your home. That's how your dog learns to get you, to get your love and attention and interaction. Often our dogs are lying at our feet while we're working or lying on their bed, just looking around, looking out the window. We ignore them completely. We don't say, hey, yes, more of that. I like what you're doing. I like this state I'm fine. I like this balance. I like this energy. Whatever you focus on grows with your dogs, with your foster dogs, with your life. And they are the most magnificent and, to me, clear opportunity to really put that into practice. If we can make a commitment to reinforce mindfully what we do want, to pay attention to what we do want as much as we can, as imperfectly and messily as we can, we will actually see the fruits of that labor in our foster dogs. It will happen in front of you in real time, and it will show you how you can do that in other areas of your life. I think this is really important and can't be stressed enough because privileges are way easier to give later than is the concept of undoing a behavior and then putting a new behavior in its place. So if you don't know if you want a dog up on the couch or you don't know if an adopter is going to want that, think ahead. Your job as a foster is to create, you know, the environment that is the most balanced, the most positive and lovely and calm and enjoyable atmosphere possible for this dog so that they can be themselves and rise to their highest potential. That's it. But if you're not sure, like I try not to let fosters up on the couch or bed. I'm not going to say I do that perfectly. I'm not going to lie to you all. But if you know, hey, I don't know if everybody wants that, or hey, I don't know if I want that, then it's just not something we practice because privileges are easier to give later when we're sure than it is to wrestle with the frustration and self-frustration of having allowed something that then now we want to catch, undo, and stop from being practiced and happening and building in repetition, and then be there to redo and put a new behavior in its place. It's way more complicated. And some of the disappointment and exasperation we feel at our dogs when that happens is really, I believe, being felt at ourselves. Overall, when we have a foster, I was talking earlier about going slowly and gradually, and that never really fades, I believe, with dogs in general, because dogs learn best slowly and gradually. When we're reinforcing mindfully and we're thinking ahead to adopters and we're keeping routines and we're coexisting together, a feedback loop is starting to be built between us where we understand the dog or we can see their tells. Oh, he needs to go to the bathroom. Oh, she doesn't like something. We identify their body language. They're also doing that to us, by the way. They're identifying, oh, she's about to go to work. Oh, he's about to start cooking, etc. We pick up on each other. And that's a beautiful thing to step inside of and pay attention to. I love it. I love every time a new foster comes into my house, I have to learn a new language almost. I have to learn a new dog. I have to learn a new code, be learned at the same time, allow myself to be studied. And there's something really rich in that. There's such an opportunity there for me to have a sort of awareness of myself and also for me to then sit in that quiet, invisible place where I understand a dog and I'm getting messages and I'm trusting the dog and I'm also trusting myself about what I'm hearing. What? What a sacred thing for a being to come into my home and give me and my kids and my other dogs and my husband and all of us. So the challenges or the inconveniences, quote unquote, or the obstacles are so small in comparison to those large, large blessings. Like they don't even tip the scale. One thing I also try to be super aware of, I'm recognizing constantly, is that I don't want to put my foster dogs in situations where they can't succeed. So if I'm unsure, I leave it out. I am only moving forward with exposure to something when I can sort of give it the time, space, and energy to really focus and do slow, gradual exposure and be there in the moment without my phone or someone else to talk to distracted to see what happens and to pick up on the communication I'm getting. Foster dogs with other animals in my home, foster dogs with my kids, with people coming into my home, like friends coming over to eat dinner or whatever. I give it time and I commit to, I dedicate myself to active supervision, which means I'm really paying attention. I'm not going to pour glasses of wine for everybody and seeing what happens with this new foster dog or the foster dog that's been there a month even, and my new friends with their kids who've come over. I'm not going to do that. I can either stay in the room and pay attention and watch what happens and offer, you know, without micromanaging, a really suggestive state that I can embody in my energy, but also speak as needed and also let things sort of unfold, step in as I need to. I'm not always going to get it right. Do I err on the side of getting in there maybe a little too much? Yes, I am a work in progress too. Yes, I could let my foster dog figure things out a bit more before like me, Gapia, gets in there to be like, okay, now we're going to go over here. Yeah, okay. I see that. I hear it. I hear the note, y'all. But I really am focused on this idea of I'm not going to put you in situations where you can't win because I'm looking for all the ways I can cheer you on. That's to me the biggest role I have as a foster. I'm really looking to cheer you on. And so slow and gradual time spent with other animals and my kids, a lot of talk, a lot of narrating like, I see that his tail's between his legs. Let's back away. Or maybe it's time for crate time. If my foster dog doesn't like something and I understand that, there's nothing wrong with that dog being in another room in the crate with a lick mat or a bully stick and having an activity separated in a safe, respectful way. Like these dogs do not have to be what we think they should be, the way we want them to be. Maybe they'll get there. Maybe they'll get halfway there. I don't know. Maybe they'll just be who they are. And maybe that's a lesson in acceptance. If we can trust in the journey and if we can trust in the unfolding, it can be a good time to explore that. And then the other thing I just want to say is throughout the entire time you have a foster, engage with them. Have a time where it's just you and your foster working together. Work on quote unquote commands, training, those sort of socialization activities I mentioned earlier. Have time playing, just playing. You can always reach out to me and I'll give you some games to play. Play family games, play games just you and them. Get to know this dog and stimulate their mind. You know, we have these big, beautiful lives where we have work and family and friends and trips, and our dogs have us. Our foster dogs too. They have us. And when we decide to get that leash out to go for a walk, training, I like to think of it as bonding and learning and teaching behaviors that make living in my house flow better. It goes smoother when we all know these behaviors. So I'm merely teaching you and telling you how to be part of this family while you're here. And it's just a fun thing to do to watch how any new foster dog learns and how things stick and how quick or slow the process might be. But I'll tell you something, you guys, I do so many oldies and you can always teach an old dog new tricks. They are because of that tendency to not only figure out who's this new pack, but also who am I to this new pack? They're incredible. Their ability, the scope of reassociating, of trying again, this being in a vulnerable state where they're trying to figure out what you want for them and how they can give it to you. while also communicating their preferences, which they're allowed to have. It's interesting how willing they are to let go and say yes to what you're offering. Oh my gosh, like, what is that? Like, my foster dogs have taught me how to be less resistant. They've taught me that with them, and therefore I carry that gift with me when I relate to other people or the things I want in my life or myself when I look in the mirror, just how to melt away some of that resistance to be where I am and then choose to feel good about it. I can't believe what they've given me. I think these are my tips. I'm going to go through them one more time, the takeaways. Get your supplies and systems together before going to that shelter or rescue group to pick out the foster dog that best suits your lifestyle. Talk to somebody who's knowledgeable and knows the animals. Shelters volunteers are outstanding, so is the staff, to give you that information. Give your foster dog a week to 3 weeks to just decompress. Understand there is a biological thing going on, as well as mindset, as well as shedding that world of hurt of whatever might have come before or whatever the trauma of being abandoned may have been for them. Offer them a routine you can commit to as much as possible. Go slowly and gradually as you expose them to new things. Engage with them. Train, work, play. And know that it's okay to make mistakes and just forgive yourself, forgive them, practice that muscle of forgiveness and move on. Try again. Remember that privileges are way easier to give later than it is to undo a habit and redo it. Think ahead to the adopters who might be a good fit for this dog. And make sure that you're reinforcing as mindfully as possible the behaviors and mindset, the state of being that the dog is giving you whenever you touch a dog, look at a dog, interact, feed, play with, are close to, speak to. You are reinforcing right in that moment. Powerful to just remove that. You don't need to punish a dog. Just remove that when you don't like a behavior that's being offered. But follow up with that moment where you give it again when they're giving you what you do want. Pay attention to what you want more of. Whatever we focus on grows. Please dedicate yourself to putting your foster dog in situations that they can succeed in, that you know they can win. Watch for their wins and cheer them on. Give it time for them to bond with other animals or kids or people in the home, and actively supervise when it's happening so that you can be there. My dog just shook out. She liked that. So that you can be there to watch their communication, watch their body language, and see how to get them out of there if you need to, or get more insight into the kind of dog they are that adopters will want that information on, so that the right home can be found for them, the right forever home. Your observations are absolutely key into finding the best fit for this dog. Always make sure to build in time apart from you so you don't create a codependent dog where you can't bear their discomfort and you can't bear your own, when really they need to learn how to self-soothe and rest as part of life. Uncomfortable feelings are part of living. Remember that dogs are really trying to figure out who this new pack is and who they are in relation to this new pack. And that is so excited. And I'm so jazzed about it every time I get a foster, because it means they can learn new associations, they can grow, they can rise, they can evolve, and you will be part of it, and you will be proud of it, and you will feel like, wow, look what I can do, look what I did. And it will be this beautiful experience you had that you look in the mirror, and it's just between you and this dog. You will look in the mirror and go, I did that, and that matters. And it's quiet, and it's invisible, and it's intangible, and in that way, it's almost faithful. And I think that makes it so lofty and so essential to our growth and to having a good life. Being of service and having this purpose and passion tied into your life as often or as seldom as possible is not something that goes away. It just stays with you forever. That's my tips on bringing home a foster dog. If you liked this information, I'm going to ask you a favor. Write a review of The Animal That Changed You on iTunes. Reviews help podcasts so, so much. Share this episode with a friend. Share this episode with a family member who doesn't understand why you do what you do, or some coworker who you know is maybe considering opening up their heart and home to the local shelter, whether it's for 1 month or consistently and constantly a revolving door of fosters like we have here, which is no better or worse. It's all helpful. It's all part of the oneness. It's all part of the whole. It's all communal, and it plugs you in. It matters. DM me. Let me know if you have any more tips you want to add to this list. Let me know if these are working for you. Let me know if you're fostering and you need support. You have a question. I will reply to you. I will be there for you. And I will be there for that dog. If you volunteer with a rescue group, thank you. If you think this might help them to send along to their fosters or to increase their foster base, please share it. Whatever I can do to help. You might be hearing Sassy panting in the background, by the way. My poor baby girl's in pain. If you need recommendations of rescues or shelters to work with, I can help you with that. Get in touch with me and I will do research so that you work with a group that is right for you. All in all, I want to say thank you for caring and for saying yes to being a foster, for listening and being a part of this group of people who love animals and want to do something about it. You know, saying that's so sad, somebody should do something about that. And of course, awareness and encouraging pet adoption is always welcome. Donations are always welcome. But also remember that you are somebody. You are somebody, and you can take actions and do too. I am so honored and grateful to support you as you do.
Thanks for tuning in to The Animal That Changed You, a weekly podcast that features extraordinary people talking about the extraordinary animal that changed their life. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Follow us on Instagram at The Animal That Changed You and tell your friends. If you've got a story about an animal that's changed your life, DM me, tell me about it, or tag us. We would love to hear. We appreciate you. And honestly, we love your animals so much. Thanks for being here.
For more great iRaw podcasts, visit iRawPod.com. That's IRoarPod.com.